Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is How Real-Time Analytics Improved Lab Performance and Helped Reduce Readmissions Due to Fewer False Positives in Sepsis Testing. The presenter is Regina Galloway, MLS, Manager of Clinical Pathology Laboratories, Ochsner Health, New Orleans, Louisiana.
Thank y'all for having me. This is my first big conference that I'm actually speaking at. So I am a native of New Orleans. So if I get a little nervous, I may talk a little fast in a foreign language. So Mike, you're in charge of like slowing me down and making sure that y'all are understanding everything I'm pronouncing. So thank you. I'm going to take you through a little journey of ours. Give you a little background about Ochsner Health and our laboratory service line and how we use data analytics in the day-to-day operations, and just give you a little bite and view of things that we've done using these tools. Now, all these projects, I didn't run all of them, but I have some people here that can definitely answer questions if we get deep into them. But just give you an idea of how you can use these data analytics to really drive turnaround times, lab utilization, you know, volume of staffing, and then we're going to get into the big finale, sepsis management, which is quite a journey that's continuing, and then just future vision enhancements that are coming down the pipe. And like he's Josh.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was about to say Josh, and I'll pause for a second. And we'll do questions and answers at the last 10 minutes. Okay, just, you know, this is something my COO does. He starts every meeting with the Ochsner core values and our mission statement. So I feel like from the lab perspective, one of the things that we really can help drive is to lead, educate, and innovate. What can the lab do to really kind of help the system out to achieve these goals? And we talk about these often because anybody from the lab knows it takes the army. We are very resilient group, a lot of teamwork involved, and we always do put patients first. So a little bit about Ochsner Health. If you don't know about Ochsner Health, I didn't know if everybody was from Louisiana, but we are, definitely a lot of hospitals. This is just the South region right here. We do cover Louisiana, Mississippi, and the Gulf South region. Here are the seven main hospitals in this area. OMC, that's called the main campus or Jeff Highway. And we have about 750 beds at this hospital. We did receive the U.S. News World Report for top hospital in Louisiana and top children's hospital. One of the things I'm really proud of, because we're going to talk about these data analytics, we've helped to drive. This is kind of new news. We received another LeapFrog A rating. That's really a high quality index for your hospital, you know, and we're going to go over some of those indicators that they use. And your RAMI score, that's your, everybody knows, mortality adjusted rate index. The lower your RAMI score is, the more high quality your hospital is. So how can the laboratory help with those things? And giving them the data analytics and tools is a really big thing. So Ochsner Laboratory main campus is like a consolidated region, the South region. So all these hospitals have instrumentation, but they don't technically do the full robust menu. So when they have tests that they don't do, they by courier get to that main campus. So daily we receive anywhere from about 11,000 to 14,000 tests. So we do about 5.5 million laboratory tests performed a year. So we kind of function as a hospital laboratory, but also as a reference lab. So to do these things, you know, it's very important that we have initiatives in mind and we make sure that we have the right technology to do these. So this is a slide about some of the initiatives and achievements from 2023 that I'm pretty proud of, that I took part in. And I wanted to kind of talk about one of the biggest things that kind of happened last year is we had a reduction in staff, and it really didn't affect the bench level, kind of affected my level and above. And with that reduction, we're tasked with this goal of how can you cut costs but find cost savings. So a lot of different work went on where they looked at contracts, they renegotiated contracts. We looked at instrumentation that was purchased during the pandemic, and were we utilizing it up to its potential? You know, because a lot of it was for COVID testing, and now that COVID testing disappeared, what are we using it for? So we sat, myself and another pathologist sat with the infectious disease and antimicrobial stewardship and took on, like, the test menu and said, what could we bring in that could really impact patient care? And so with those initiatives, the micro and molecular testing saved the institution about $500,000. $500,000. So we were really proud of that goal. We're still working on different initiatives with transplant that are really kind of driving the length of stay. So, you know, and continuing that LEAP A score for the survey. So just something that without the data analytics, we couldn't get to this point. So the real data analytics that we kind of use at Ochsner, it's not the only data analytics, is vision. So we started this journey with vision in 2021. So I actually started Ochsner 3 years ago and was introduced to it. Never heard of it. Was an epic beaker from my last institution. So I knew how to drive those reports pretty well. But I noticed, you know, using a different LIS to pull the data, and I kind of did this in the poll, if you want to talk about the poll a little bit. You know, I asked that question, like, how long did it take for you to pull that data? Did it, you know, like somebody asked us for 2 years worth of data, did you have to like do it in small little increments and keep saving that Excel spreadsheet and putting it into one? And that's what you kind of run into when you try to use your LIS to pull this data. It's not real time. And using this tool is pretty easy. It can be scary at first. You know, lab people are not the most savvy at computers. I'm going to be honest about that. But I think once you learn how to use it, I've been in meetings where I've been able to use this program and answer the question, like, who is the doctor ordering this test the most? And it really, once you put your information in there, it's very easy. It pulls it in like less than 2 to 3 minutes, and you're really getting like real-time results and giving that feedback to the people who are needing it. So I'm going to hit on some key projects that we did using Vision to kind of give y'all a sense of how the tool is used and things that are coming down the pipe for development. This isn't everything it does, so if y'all have any questions, please stop me, and we can, you know, of course, answer it if you have something at your institution that you would like to ask more about. Any questions up to this point? Okay. Trying to slow down. I don't know why I'm nervous. That's just me. But like I said, you know, because I talk to the service line every day and it's about this size, so it's pretty okay. So we're going to talk about turnaround time data, mostly for the ED, how you can impact that. A little bit about hospital and quality metrics, and then how those drive patient satisfaction scores to length of stay and delay in treatments. And then a little bit about lab utilization. We use this tool a lot for lab utilization, especially for looking at things we're going to insource in. I've used it for staffing, and then we're going to end with blood sepsis management. So this is just an example of, I think everybody's probably seen this, hospital quality metrics that our infection prevention or your committees present to the hospital of things that we have to make sure that we're keeping our eye on and, keeping them as low as possible. Now, this isn't all pulled by Vision, but some of it is, and we're able to give this information so they can assess the quality, find projects that need to be worked on, especially if you see an increase, and we're going to talk a little bit about blood culture contamination rates, and just it's a way for the hospital to kind of keep a pulse on how they're doing and where they need to improve on. So one of the first things that I use Vision for or were involved in was our ED turnaround time. So this is an example of a monthly report. It gets emailed to your key people that you need it to see it. So at Jeff Highway, we use it to our supervisors, our director, myself, maybe. I don't think it goes to Austin, but it's just a way of looking at the key blood tests that are in the ED and how are we doing. So you set a target. So we set a target for all our stats from the ED to be done in 60 minutes. And our goal was for 95%. So we present this report on a daily basis to our staff to say, hey, look, we're all in a green. Now, we do have a little red, so we failed at one parameter right there. But we're going to talk about that in a second of, like, when we're out of, you have an outlier, how you can investigate it, and what you can do to improve that. So when they started running this report, they actually used it as a way to initiate what needs to be improved in the chemistry. So prior to that star right there, we had an automated chemistry track, pretty old, pretty rundown, was very overused with our volume. So that star indicates when we actually installed a new automated track. So you can see prior to the install of the new track, we were not hitting our goals. So we installed that new track. We saw improvement, but we weren't at 95% 24 hours a day. So we had to, like, do a workout and really drill down into the work and see what is it that we're missing here. So they pulled in key stakeholders. So the ED was involved, because from the moment that the ED dropped off the specimen, or if they tubed the specimen, we didn't have, like, a lean designated space where the stats went. So the processors could pick it up, receive it, put it on the analyzer. Our central processing techs didn't know really what a stat meant, you know, like the timeline involved, how we're trying to, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. And once we gave them, we call it the shared vision of what everything is needed, it really improved, and it kind of made it a competition between, now this is just chemistry analytes, but you can, you know, hematology and chemistry have this, like, competition. And y'all, there's a trophy involved. So they have, like, green every day. That trophy's, like, being passed around the room. So it is a requirement for our supervisors to try to do this every day, start their huddle and say, hey, look at the good news here. You guys did really well. We also used Epic Secure Chat, if y'all are familiar with Epic, a way to communicate directly with the ED, let them know what the critical is, and let them know if there needs to be a recollection. We're going to talk more about recollections in the ED. And then just, it also helped us look at the track maintenance. So this next slide kind of goes post from the workout. You definitely see improvements, but we still had a couple outliers. So we even went a step further. You know, we're very visual people, so we made pink labels for the ED. We're trying to make it that you see that pink, you process it immediately. But even after that, we still had some red checks, and those were due to, like, instrumentation downtimes. And what we've figured out from this, that we had a couple of older analyzers, and we have gone through the replacement of those and with a double eye. So we're able to now make this a more efficient process. But it did tell us, too, that even with this improvement with the instruments, we still need a lot of attention to have somebody on site, like a field service engineer, in case something is down because of our numbers. So this data, we're going to continue to monitor, see how we're doing now, because we've actually, like I said, installed those new analyzers. We've got two field service engineers dedicated to the Ochsner site. Now, they're not there 24/7, but we're kind of first on the list. You know, so with those improvements, are we still meeting that goal? And like I said, there's a trophy involved every day. So, and we try to do ovations. That's our, like, recognition for the employees. So with that said, knowing that, you know, those key indicators come from the lab's perspective, there's a lot that the ED collectors can do too. So just so y'all know, we don't have, like, dedicated phlebotomists in our ED at Jeff Highway. So that means a lot of these blood collections are even are being done by the nurse or the tech that's in that ED. So we were able to put together, this is a monthly quality report that gets emailed to the ED manager and her educator and the director, and they use these initiatives to kind of see where can they improve. So you see hemolysis is way out, you know. So this is, like, actually turned into a little performance improvement project. Well, it's like a little work group, and they're addressing hemolysis. How can they improve it? So they actually use some of our phlebotomist coordinators to go up there and teach them how to stick appropriately. But all these things drive EDs length of stay, patient satisfaction, you know, anytime you have a recollection, you just think about that patient just sitting there further or having to be stuck again. And it's just not, it's something that the ED wants to, you know, eliminate as best they can. But a lot of this is like education and just driving that message home. So this is just something we share with our ED collaborators, and they share this information. There's like a, I think it's a quarterly meeting called the ED Collaborative, and they present this data and what they need to improve it. Any questions so far? Okay. So how do you drill down on this? So this is just a picture of that hemolysis. So you can actually, now I took out the patient information. I'm not trying to do a HIPAA violation while I'm doing this talk. But you can see, like, you can key down into the actual last column's called phlebotomy ID. Now, it says phlebotomy, but remember, we don't have dedicated phlebotomists in our ED. But you can really drill down to, do you have a trend? Do you have a particular collector that's really having a tough time collecting stuff, and you can do that pinpointed education to them. I think the biggest thing I learned from this report is, first, we had to make the ED leaders, their stakeholders, actually understand what it meant. You know, when you go back to it, they were a little confused about the end, well, the count on those first two lines. They were like, well, why doesn't it match? And they do see, they do collect 11,000 specimens a day. So this is huge. But the first two are just strictly for tests that can be hemolyzed and can be clotted. So making them understand what it means first, then they could really understand it and present it to their staff. And like I said, they present this on their quality board. Don't think they keep it in this format, but this kind of gives them a quick picture of where they need to fix something, especially if they had a rough night in the ED and there was their length of stay was longer than expected. So another way we use this is through stewardship. So that's a big term right now, is lab utilization and stewardship. Looking for initiatives of how to help physicians maybe choose the right test at the right time. So this project is one that our clinical pathologist and her report manager is working on to assess when a patient has an MCV, so that's that mean cell value from the CBC volume, I'm sorry, mean cell volume from the CBC. When does the doctor, in 60 days, I think it says, comes back and orders an iron test? So that could be a ferritin or TIBC. So they're looking to see, is the doctor reacting to the low MCV value in a timely manner? And if they're not, what can we do to drive that change? You know, sometimes you can do BPAs, which are best practice advisories in Epic, or do you need to do some education? But, you know, nobody, you know, education can be good but doesn't always sustain. So what do we need to do to help these physicians really utilize the tools that they need for better patient care? So this is just one way we were able to use this QU03 report that's already set up in the Vision software. Once you picked out the parameters, you were able to kind of use filters in Excel, because you can this exports to an Excel spreadsheet, and you could pull out the key stakeholders, physicians, that, you know, are not meeting the percentages that you want them to meet, and maybe start that conversation with them and drive that testing algorithm to help improve this. So this is just an example of one of the projects we're doing. A lot of times, you know, we use this report to also look at volumes that we want to maybe insource. I used it for just recently. We got some automation in microbiology, so I had to take like different cultures, and then I didn't do this myself with my director. We took different culture types and looked at, you know, what time of the day they came, what's the turnaround time, so we could assess, you know, how many instruments we needed. So this data really kind of helps drive different initiatives, and I'm going to show you some other examples of what we can do. But any questions so far about test utilization? Okay. So, you know, we're in New Orleans. Mardi Gras is a holiday here, so, which is kind of new to me, too. Well, I always came back for Mardi Gras, but I only came back for the Saturday, so now I'm here during the whole thing. So I have a newer supervisor, and she's like, Regina, how do I staff for it? You know, because that's one thing. Holidays can be tough in that you want to have enough staffing that you can definitely get the test done, but you don't want to overstaff because then your labor analytics for that pay period are awful. So what we did is we ran this report. It's a workflow and productivity report of Mardi Gras from the previous year, and we were kind of back to normal that year and looked at what was the volume per hour, you know, at the hour of the day. So the hour of the day is at the bottom and the volume's at top. So we could assess how many people we needed, especially for that evening night shift. Just a quick tool so she could kind of assess the volumes and say, hey, do I have enough people on board? We also use this report for those outliers, for those ED turnaround times. Especially if the outlier happened at a particular time, you can run this report, see what was going on in the lab at that time and say, hey, you know what? We were really impacted. You know, we got a huge drop from the Baton Rouge area. So maybe that's one of the reasons. Maybe we need to address like how we're sorting this out. It just kind of gives us some more information about what was going on. So we do take Mardi Gras very seriously here. You know, everybody wants to be off, but it's just another way that we can use it as a way to help cascade, you know, overtime and reduce overtime, but also make sure we're not overstaffed. Let's see. So I think, you know, a big initiative for this year is blood culture contamination rates. And that's driven by CLSI, that's your Clinical Laboratory Standard Institute, changed the requirement. They have actually published that they would, you know, for your gold standard of collection, you should hit a rate of 1% or lower. So at Ashner, because we do not have dedicated phlebotomists in the ED, we use our phlebotomists as our gold standard. So this is 2023 data. So they're our gold standard. So most of the time, they are below 1%. There are times they're elevated, usually, and that's what we drill down into. If we have newer hires, do we need to do some more training? We need to make sure they're not, you know, phlebotomists don't do this, but nursing does this a lot, drawn from the line. That's not clean as appropriately as a regular blood culture. Now, what we did for the hospital, the nurses in the ED, we gave them a stretch gold of 2%. So that's something that we're trying to drive down because we are a little bit high on our end. So based on these contamination rates, this has kind of driven a whole blood culture work group looking at what do they need to do to help drive this information down. And then so we started presenting the data a little bit differently this year, really showing that, you know, and look at my phlebotomy, they're doing exceptional. You know, hey, this is 1% for the gold standard, your stretch goal of 2, but, you know, really, you know, for nursing and ED, they still got the 3% there, but we know that they really could strive to do lower. So certain things are, you know, we are definitely, well, we trialed this, so they are using a deviation device in the ED. Now they're doing standard kits of the deviation device along with the blood culture bottles to help drive that initiative and really lower that blood culture contamination rate. And just continue to talk about it. I provide to the ED like weekly contamination rates where my pathologist does it monthly. And what we can do from those, we're able to give them a little bit information about the cost that could occur if you have a contamination rate. Or you have a contamination, I'm sorry. So just as based from literature, this is just not Ashner practice alone. It's about $4,000 every time a patient has a contaminated blood culture. You know, that think about what's going on in that cost. That patient, if they came through the ED, they have to be recalled in, recollected, possibly admitted, placed on antibiotics until that blood culture, the new blood culture, goes off positive. And then, you know, all the hospital costs involved when you have a workup done. So we're trying to present this data a little bit differently to them, showing them that the cost that could occur. Now, we are only giving them the cost after the goal for the nursing, which is above 2%. Well, with that said, even with presenting this information, because we don't have control of their collectors, we can't really drive change for them. So meeting with stewardship and infection prevention, we need to give them some more tools. We had the instrumentation, but again, you know, remember the pandemic. Busy time, We have all the tools in the house, but we weren't quite doing all the menus or tests that were offered on these tools. So that was kind of part of my initiative, where I looked into what the ID and ASP group needed and started driving those tests to be validated and reported. So one of the first things we did in August of 2022, and we're a little behind, you know, other hospitals, we started doing an MRSA assay blood culture by PCR. So from that positive gram stain, if they see gram-positive cocci in clusters, they immediately put it on this cartridge. 62 minutes later, when it's on the instrument, if there's no issues, you can get an answer. Is it MRSA? Is it Staph aureus? If that's like not detected, then you can kind of make that assumption, hey, this is a contaminant. And that really kind of drives what the physician will do next. They'll still wait for the full culture results, don't get me wrong, but they'll say, oh, this is possibly a contaminant. Maybe something else is going on with this patient, or maybe we can DC these antibiotics because this is not a true contaminant. So that was one of the first things that we implemented. But knowing we weren't covering the whole realm of positive blood cultures and all the pathogens involved, we went to a multiplex panel that's pretty robust, a lot of gram negatives, covers your streps, covers your enterococcus. The biggest take home from this one, and we're going to talk about yeast a little bit, is your yeast that are on this panel. And then you had some resistant markers. I mean, knowing that we're seeing a rise of resistance, and we definitely, since we started doing this panel, and we're also doing a Carbo-R, since they discontinue modified Hodge testing, we are definitely seeing an increase in carbapenemase-resistant gram-negatives. We also test Acinetobacter and Pseudomonas, but mostly in their Bacterales family, we're definitely seeing an increase. So this panel allows us to give this information, same concept. You have that positive blood, you see that gram stain morphology. What we do at our site, if it's not Staph, then they go to this panel. And then this one takes about the same amount of time, a little bit over an hour, and you have all this information available to them that they can drive change. But we're talking to stewardship, like, this is amazing, but, you know, they still don't get to really, you know, they're not consulted. Like, stewardship is not consulted on every patient that has a positive blood. And that was something we needed to improve on. So one of the first reports we did in Vision is we just gave them, you know, their key stakeholders, those that are doing the rounding on these inpatients and for the other hospital, because they're kind of like a service line too, the stewardship group. We would do this daily report, and they get this every day about 6 in the morning, and it tells them all the, you know, PCR blood culture tests that were done from the day before. So they know where to start when they get in every morning, looking at these patients' charts, reviewing it, say, do they have them on the right antibiotic? Do they need to change it up from a broad spectrum to a more targeted, you know, treatment? And then really just impacting the patient's overall performance and improving that length of stay. And we are doing a project on this right now, so I don't have, like, firm data to give you, but soon we're going to write up a paper about this. Now, this is not new to the microbiology world, but it's new to Ochsner, and it's really has given them an opportunity to, like, see patients that they were never consulted on before, and they really are educating the physicians more that are involved in these cases to really kind of drive the treatment change and then improve a total overall seeing of that patient. And it also gives them an idea of when it's a contaminant or not. They never really had that information before, so they can really feel more comfortable. Like, nobody wants the DC antibiotics unless they have just like a very, you know, firm answer in front of them. So when they see what's coming off these panels and they know it's not a pathogen, they feel very comfortable taking them off of those antibiotics. You know, that drives the reduction of costs of treatment, and we're also helping the whole, let's stop the resistance from going on, putting patients on drugs that are not necessary, you know, driving that change. And this is a really huge initiative. It's on the infection prevention checklist about having stewardship in your hospital. It's on our CAP checklist. I think it's on JCO too, that you really need to have a strong stewardship presence in your facility to really drive resistance down and antibiotic usage. So we're happy to do this initiative. It's been very successful. We continue to try to avoid those cost readmissions and driving that cost of contaminant down. But one of the biggest wins from this panel and this whole information is the yeast. They really, when a patient has a yeast in their blood culture, you truly have like 48 hours to get the patient on the right treatment. And because it calls out the different candidas, because Glorata is very resistant, and they changed the name of Glorata. I'm not even going to say it because y'all won't even recognize it. We're going through name changes right now. And I'm like, what are they thinking? But they're able to take that information and really get the patient on the right path. You know, IDs on the case from the moment that, you know, PCR goes positive, and they're able to drive those initiatives. So some of the things that are coming down. So any questions about blood culture utilization? Anything you see in your practice that you want to talk about? Okay. And we'll do more questions at the end. We're at a version of vision that's not the 17. So there are some updates that are coming down the pipe. One of the things, you know, I talk often with our analysts about is, you know, it, from a laboratory's perspective, we always need to know, like, what are our volumes every month? I use this to stage, are my standing orders correct? Do I need to decrease my standing orders if my test volume's going down? If I am trying to insource a test, the vendor's always asking me, well, what's your volume? It's a way for me to kind of have this information at hand. And also for your CAP checklist, you're supposed to have different things like about your turnaround times to your positivity rate. They kind of all tie into each other. So the version 17 will have some enhancement that you will be able to monitor month over month. I mean, today we do each month, but we have to export that information to an Excel spreadsheet, which is in another folder, and you got to go to another folder to find it. You know, in the future, it'll all be right at hand in one report, and you can look at it. So just making that ease, because remember, like I said, not all laboratorians are computer savvy or feel comfortable with it, but it is easy when you get an email and you just open it up and you're like, wow, okay, let me look at this. So, I mean, I think that's going to be a great enhancement. They are working on an antibiogram for microbiology and for antimicrobial stewardship. So every system does it a little bit differently. The stewardship's pulling it directly from maybe their infection control software. A lot of times the lab's pulling that information for them. We kind of do combination of both. Our pathologist pulls the data, but for Jeff Highway, the antimicrobial stewardship leader, he actually mines the data for Jeff Highway and puts it in the, you know, the presentation that he wants to do, pulling out those key organisms that that they see most often and, you know, the susceptibilities that are involved with that, the percentages. And then she helps across the service on all the other ones. So this kind of takes, this is like a big project, especially with all the labs. You kind of just saw the South. Believe me, there's way more places across the Hochschild system that we kind of assist with pulling this data. And they do have this in your LIS, but sometimes you run into, if you have suppression rules written on your antibiotics, they may not come across as easily to your LIS. So sometimes you have to use things and make sure that the data is correct. And, you know, you want to look at, make sure, you know, there are standards about antimicrobial antibiograms. Like you have to pull at least 30 isolates for it to be meaningful. So that's, you know, coming down the pipe to give just another options to people to run that data a little bit easier. We talked about blood culture contamination rates. They're coming out with something like that. It does take a little bit of putting some comments into your blood culture. And I think a lot of institutions are doing that today when there's a possible contaminant. They do report that, so you're able to pull reports on it. But there is a little bit of manipulation of the blood culture contamination report, at least what we're pulling today in our LIS. Now, we are switching to a different LIS next year, so you know, we have to see, is it going to be the same? Is it going to be less manipulation? And that's what I would like to get to, that it's less back-end work and deletion of stuff, and you just have a nice, clean report from the beginning to make everybody's life easier. These are dreams, by the way. I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but they are dreams. So they are adding to version 17 a blood bank module and an AP module. And the biggest thing is peer comparison. So as a service line, you know, we have those, all those smaller hospitals. Then we have our bigger sister and brother hospitals. We got representation here from Lafayette up to Shreveport. Because we have like instrumentation, we can take analytes and compare them across the service line and see how we're doing, especially if we got like a trend going on with QC. Is everybody seeing that trend? Or you have a CAP survey that maybe was unacceptable. Let's see how we're performing on that. We do try as a service line to use all the same lot, because so we can borrow from each other. That's a lot. It's that sounds easy, but it's not the easiest thing to accomplish. But this peer comparison can kind of help us run data a little bit easily. And then when we're looking at it, we're able to see what we need to do differently. So I'm right at 40 minutes, right?
We've got 13 minutes left.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, so just knowing that there's some enhancements, I just want to say that using tools like this kind of goes along with Ochsner. This is Ochsner's theme for the next 2 years. We're bringing innovation to life. How can we take things like this, like data analytics, to automation and really improve our patient care and what we're doing? So thank y'all for letting me share our experiences. And like I said, it's not everything we do with Vision, but it does make the day-to-day easier. I do get asked like weekly, hey, can you pull this? Can you pull that? And it's so nice to like kind of reach out to the Vision group and our super user, she's in the crowd right now, and just say, how do I run this? And a lot of times I don't even have to ask for help, but some of these are a little bit difficult. And really, once you know what you're doing, it runs in like less than 5 minutes. So it's just an essential tool to kind of help. Because I think the lab is definitely going through a change where we're collaborating more with different departments to try to standardize and just improve processes. So I'm really excited to have this tool. All right, so any questions? Not from Mike Black. Yes, sir. Oh, I'll let Josh.
Excuse me, great talk.
Oh, thank you. So your question is, he wanted me to repeat the question for the recording. So what do you put in place for your staff to understand the interfaces so they can...
What is your staff with feedback?
I think that's important. You know, those daily huddles we do when we have outliers, especially a good example, critical value notification during the late hours, you know, especially if it's not an inpatient. So when they give us that feedback, we kind of look at, you know, what could the system do for us, like the Epic in basket messaging? Could we utilize that tool? Or can we even utilize, what we found is that there is a way to look up physicians that are on call for other physicians. And like the lab didn't know about that at first or know how to drive it. Let's just say that. Didn't drive it to the way that it was more meaningful. And so our pathologists were getting late night calls about critical values. So, you know, myself and my director kind of have intervened and worked through this process with the Epic, the Epic team, looking at that on-call finder and just showing our staff how to utilize that tool. I think it's important to listen to that feedback, because if they can't do it, there's probably six other people that are in the same situation that don't understand it. So we have to really kind of give them the tools to understand how to use the, use those different enhancements. So I think that's one of the things that we continue to try to do, is just kind of listen to the feedback and kind of give them the tools to do it. We talked about this, you know, just from a leader's perspective. Not all leaders have taken to using vision because I think they're a little skeptical about it, you know. And I really think it is one of those things you kind of have to do it a couple of times and get used to it. And the more often you do it, the easier it gets. Don't get me wrong. I might not use it for like 3 weeks and I'm like, oh, wait, how do I do this again? Do I need to call somebody, ask, you know, phone a friend? But I think that's important that we kind of drive the initiative and get everybody kind of used to using it. So that's one of the initiatives we're going to try to make sure across our service line, our leaders have these tools and kind of can feel more comfortable with them.
Yeah, it was a great talk, Regina. Thank you so much. Okay. We do have a couple questions, okay. Some that you previously answered, but perhaps okay. We could repeat them and you could answer them again, not on the messaging app. What are some of the real-time analytics and alerts that can help improve efficiency, reduce turnaround time, and save money?
So using vision, like I said, in the cases of when you're running your data analytics, which is another analytical program, we use OB at Jeff Highway, it's able to show your full-time FTE based on your volume. So that's an indication to us when we're overstaffed or understaffed. And then we take that and look at our volumes, and then we can use vision as a tool to kind of drill down and say, okay, looking at the staffing per hour, where can we improve on this? We've also used tools like to assess overtime. You know, we did use agency for a little bit during the pandemic. We are on, you know, trying to, we're almost walked them out. But because we're going to a new LIS, we've kind of kept some in the reserves because that's a huge project. I've got techs off the bench learning the new LIS. So that is an initiative. I use those labor analytics, the data analytics to determine how much longer am I going to keep this agency? Because, you know, agency is very costly. And actually, you know, I think, you know, the opening up, we're seeing more positive push to, you know, getting more applications. It's still a little hard in our field. Not everybody goes into our field. But we are seeing some improvements in getting hires. We even, you know, opened it up to international hires. That's helped us out tremendously. We have associations with different schools. But even when I worked at University of Mississippi and we had that school right there, they always had so many choices to go to because a lot of laboratories are needed, you know, are needing med tech. So that's one of the things we can kind of forecast is like when we need staffing.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to paraphrase this next question. So was there any validation done between the data flowing outside of the LIS into Vizion, and is it done on an ongoing basis to make sure accuracy?
Yeah, so like when you first go to your vision analyst and ask them to run a report for you, we kind of look at what we're running today in Soft, and we do like smaller dated increments and really kind of make sure, is this meaningful and true data? And then we'll open it up to the bigger timeline. So sometimes it does take clicking the right parameters and making sure your filters are on correctly, but you should validate it because sometimes, you know, it could be the difference of received versus verified or collected versus received, you know. It just depends on what you're looking at. So that's kind of what the vision group helps us do is before they kind of say, okay, here it is, and we'll mail it out to everybody, they're going to make sure that that report is really pulling the right data because you want to have good information to drive these changes.
Great, thank you. Do you give the actual critical result in secure chat or a message to call the lab for the result?
So, no, great question. So currently for the inpatient side, they use secure chat and chemistry on the IM. They secure chat the team and let them know that there's a critical value and here's the critical value. Now, on the outpatient side, they're not always in Epic, so you really need to be careful about using secure chat or in-basket messaging. So usually with them, we leave a message to have them call us back so we can give them that critical value.
Great. I'm not a lab person, but I could probably answer this question already.
Okay.
Do you have any challenges with the ED perception that hemolysis occurs in the laboratory?
Yeah, that's kind of eye-opening for them. I mean, yeah, that's kind of what this drive team's about, like kind of opening their eyes to the size of the needle, like how you collect it, if you're collecting it from a syringe versus an IV, really kind of drives that. You know, it's just that age-old, the lab did it. You know, we're always the one that kind of takes the blame for these. So it's kind of just changing the tune and saying, we're not, I think since they added, I think that's a great asset to the chemistry analyzers now do that hemolysis index, which really kind of measures how the tube is hemolyzed prior to, you know, prior to even running the test. I think that really gave us some data to go behind. It's like, wait, no, this thing is like 4+. We didn't do this, you know. So, you know, it's hard for them, you know, because they have to restick the patient. But I think, you know, it's just kind of educating them on their practices. So I think, you know, that's a common thing that, you know. But it's, I think once they understand the process, they're willing to try to make that change.
Great. We've got two more questions in the app. One question I see in the audience.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll have to probably defer to maybe Mike Black about that question because I really don't know about costs. But time, it did take some time. I mean, I think what did we discuss last night? We have like about 1,000 reports built right now. And, you know, they weren't all done at the same time. It depended on the needs as we get the request. I think on average, like if you talk about that utilization, maybe that took maybe a meeting. And once they knew what they were looking for and they got it, they tested and validated it, it took maybe a few days, you know, when they're deeper into, like, filtering and stuff. Cost, I'm not really privy to talk about that.
We have a couple of our sales reps here that are capable of discussing that, but it's, you know, you go and you get that discuss with the client the implementation, what that cost would look like. We have different capabilities of, you know, multiple year contracts and things like that. Then once you have the application, you have our team. And so we are there for whatever questions. We are always available. We are assigned specific clients. And so we are constantly there to be able to help them create these reports, help them troubleshoot, and help them continue to grow with different applications and different modules that we have.
And just from my experience, when I have like a new report, like maybe ID's asking me, I have one little 30-minute sesh, and then it's created. So it's pretty timely. It's kind of like based on your calendar when you have that 30 minutes to kind of meet with them and talk it through. And then, like, it does real-time. I didn't know if I really emphasized that. They're emailing to these stakeholders, and you set the frequency. And once you've got all that information in there, it's kind of like copy and pasting, and it's real kind of easy to do once you figure out the flow of it.
Yeah. A lot easier than pulling Epic reports.
Yeah.
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 That was sarcasm. Yes.
So I had a question. So you mentioned several different LIS systems.
Yeah.
So is this data analytics program able to pull data from the various ones? So, like, take, for instance, we have Epic for most of our lab, but then we also have SoftBank for our blood bank. And so it's very difficult to get data from SoftBank and then pulling the Epic reports from Epic, especially for the blood bank, because they don't really talk to one another.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know if this system is able to take data and do the analytics for SoftBank and Epic at the same time or simultaneously or whatever.
Yeah, and that version 17, when you're on that one, Kathy can kind of speak more about that. It will, yeah.
Yeah, the answer is yes.
Okay.
We are capable of doing that. We are capable of pulling analytics from all of the major LIS vendors,
mm-hmm.
and especially for the Epic clients that have to have a different kind of blood bank mm-hmm. application. You need the hemoglobin, the platelet counts, things like that from mm-hmm. the Epic. You need the soft data, and yes, we can.
And Ochsner may not have this yet, but we also can for large health systems. If you have multiple Epic builds for different divisions or regions, we can now take that, normalize that data, and spit it out into executive dashboards or broader scale normalized KPI dashboards against the disparate LIS system.
Is that through Vizion or is that through like a Power BI? Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay. Question in the audience.
I just have a question about your labor analytics. So when you do that, are you just pulling your volumes out of the vision or are you like somehow inputting your time card system?
Well, so that's a different application called OBI, and it pulls in, like, the worked hours based on the productive hours and the volume. So it's a really easy dashboard report that does it per pay period. So I'm able to see each pay period of what was forecasted, you know, like, you know, what was thought to, you know, be your FTE and how many FTEs you actually had. And it kind of tells me, based on the volumes you had for that pay period, did I have enough staffing? Was I understaffed? Was I overstaffed? And it helps me know, like, yeah, I got to really get this position filled, you know. And it tells finance when they're approving these positions, look, they're overstaffed. Why are you even wanting a position, you know? So they look at, we have to give them six rolling, you know, pay periods before they'll approve a position now. And if you're in the red, don't even try to put it in there unless you got a nice little dissertation of why you want this position. And sometimes, you know, you just have to explain the story. The labor analytics aren't perfect. You know, for microbiology, it's challenging because a lot of our stuff is manual. And, you know, it's all by CPT. Like, what is the pay you charge for that test? It doesn't really encompass all those 4 days that they put their hands on those plates. So you kind of have to tell them the story a little bit, but that's what we use on a, you know, to look at the labor analytics. The way I kind of use vision in that thing is like, okay, it just gives me a volume number. What exactly is that volume? So then you go to vision and kind of like break down. What I saw like this last year is my microbiology culture number went down, but my molecular testing went up, which makes sense because I brought in some new molecular testing and, you know, really kind of changed the face. We picked up more clients from the outpatient setting that like kind of some of those panels. So we really do had a shift towards the molecular testing, which drives your cost up a little bit because it's more expensive. So you kind of have to explain that story to your higher-ups in administration or operations to say, hey, you know, but look at my revenue. My revenue's increased, but my spending did go up a little bit. Yeah. So
it's OBI a part?
It's not a part of vision. It's a different data analytic out there. It's OBIEE. Some people use Strata. That's another one that's out there. But y'all might have something just very similar. Yeah.
It just depends on how you're
saying. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm talking about different vendors.
All the systems have to work together.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're 5 minutes past. I want to thank Regina so much for your presentation.
Thank y'all very much.
It was outstanding. You didn't go too fast. Thank you
so
much.
I'm so glad it's
Thanks,
there
everyone.
Y'all have a great convention.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.